We'll go to Phil in Arizona. Phil, what's going on?
This is Johnny.
Okay, go ahead, Johnny.
How you doing tonight? It's Brian, AJ, everybody.
What's up, man?
Just had a question for AJ. I was just wondering how you feel about your large following in the gay community.
The gay community?
Well, I don't think I've seen three men hook it up together in one time, and there's a first right there.
The gay community.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Who's that? You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I woke up this morning to find that the woman who voices Siri on the iPhone is now following me on Twitter. It's a very weird way to start the day. Last night was a lot of fun, though. It was at Dangerfield's Comedy Club here in New York. Rob Van Dam was doing a comedy set. Went to go see him. Very interesting to watch RVD do his thing. He had one funny joke about wrestling fans. He's talking about how people come up to him all the time and they say, "Man, I don't know how you do it. You know, you're on the road all the time, going from town to town. You know, you have all these women throwing themselves at you. You know, how do you resist? You know, how do you do it?" To which he replied, "Have you seen wrestling fans?" And that got one of the biggest applause lines of the night in a room that was not full of wrestling fans. So that just goes to show you right there what a lot of people still think about wrestling fans. But that was entertaining. Although I will say the biggest thing I learned last night was not from RVD. It was from another comedian. I had no idea that you could use Morgan Freeman's voice now in the Waze app. That's fucking amazing. Now I can't wait to go somewhere. I'm thinking I might cancel my flight and drive to Dallas next month. Anyway, when that was over, we went next door. There was a bar that was showing the UFC pay-per-view, which was fucking amazing. I gotta tell you, it was the first time that I've been in a bar in the city here that was showing a UFC pay-per-view. The bar was packed, got more packed as the night went on. And those two main events, you know, the Holly Holm fight and the Conor McGregor fight, just, you know, to be in that atmosphere was amazing, but then to see those fights, it was incredible. I mean, everybody was just jumping up, they were going nuts. Like I said, the place was packed, two big upsets. It was a good night for UFC last night in a lot of ways. Maybe not so much for poor Dana White. Might want to take away his belt and his shoelaces. But I had a lot of fun. Mark it on your calendars, April 2nd, 2017. That looks to be the date for WrestleMania 33. And the place appears to be the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida, which was the site of WrestleMania 24. I wasn't at that WrestleMania, but from what I've been told, the Citrus Bowl was kind of a shithole. That maybe is not as much of a shithole now. They've made renovations. They've spruced it up a little bit. So it looks like they're going back there next year. The official announcement has not been made yet. It could come as early as next week. So just keep that in mind. That would only leave two more years for me to earn that steak dinner that Noah Mark promised me when we made that bet 4 years ago. He was convinced that they would host a WrestleMania overseas by the time WrestleMania 35 rolled around. I said they would not. I'm feeling pretty good about my chances right now. But WWE had a scary night on Friday. Four different wrestlers got hurt at live events. Emma got her bell rung by a kick from Asuka at the NXT show. That match had to end early. Tommaso Ciampa, I saw, hurt his shoulder, it looked like. He was taking the Shatter Machine from Dash and Dawson at the NXT show. Charlotte got her nose busted open against Becky Lynch. Their match had to be stopped early. Sheamus got busted open in his match. None of them appear to be serious. I don't know about Ciampa. I haven't heard about him, but the others seem to be okay. But believe me, the last thing they need right now are more injuries. Before we move on here, I want to give some love to Audible. Audible's been great to the Sound Off. They've been a great sponsor of the show, and they are still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial, 30 days free. You can try out the service. You can check out any audiobook of your choosing of the 180,000 that they have available, many of which are wrestling books. If you've never read Brock Lesnar's book, it's a quick read, easy read. His book is on there, Daniel Bryan's book. Chris Jericho's, well, I think the most recent Jericho book, maybe not all three. Hogan's book, Dusty Rhodes, Lex Luger. A lot of great stuff on there. Use our URL, audibletrial.com patreon.com/Solemonster. Punch that URL in, go through the sign-up process. Once you do that, you can get one free audiobook. And if you decide this is not for you, you don't like it, whatever the case may be, and you need to cancel before your 30 days are up, you don't get billed, you don't get charged, and you get to keep your book. It's a win-win situation. So audibletrial.com/Solemonster. Every time you use that link, you are supporting this podcast, and I very much appreciate that. Don't forget, we also have a couple of new shirts up in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. A couple of 1992 themed shirts. What a year that was. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, you are able to do so anytime you wish on the Solemonster.com. You'll see the little PayPal box on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. Thank you to Yvonne Bruiser Balak, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Out of Control Cody Thomas, The Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, Radiant Ray Wrighton, Fred the Shed Carter, Sean the Mangler Tanger, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Guts and Glory Eric Gutierrez, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, Gabriel Dirty Sanchez, The West Side Strangler William Poole, Gregarious Gregory Jones Jr., End of Days Eric Owen, Michael the Marksman Murphy, and Montese Antoine Moore, whose John Cena song, which is called Triumphant, has been viewed now over 200,000 times. If you haven't heard it yet, it's pretty good. Give it a listen. Go to facebook.com/AntoineMooreLewis. That's Antoine Moore with two O's. Lewis, all one word. And while you're over there, give him a like and a follow. Antoine's a good guy. I also want to give a shout-out here to Good Mic Work. Good Mic Work has a pretty cool channel up on YouTube. He just posted a six-hour WrestleMania retrospective podcast on his YouTube channel that you should check out. He clearly put a lot of work into it. It's up on his channel, or you can go to his website, which is goodmicworkcommentaries.com, and show him some love. He put a lot of work into that. It's pretty cool stuff. If you are wondering why this is episode 429 and not 428, 428 did go up on the feed, so it is available on iTunes and Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbay, Player.fm, the Android app. You can get this show a lot of different ways. It went up on there Thursday night. Originally, it was posted on YouTube. It is still on YouTube. It is my interview with good old JR, Jim Ross. I had the opportunity to talk to him for about 20 minutes earlier this week, talking about his debut on New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access Television, which I'll talk about here in a second. He's got a lot of other ventures. I mean, he's keeping very busy these days. But we also talked some WWE. I asked him about Nakamura coming over to WWE. He's somebody, Nakamura is, that JR got to know a little bit last year when he was over there calling the Wrestle Kingdom show, and he's very high on Nakamura, as I think a lot of people are. But as somebody who's worked for WWE before and knows the system and knows how Vince McMahon kind of thinks, kind of. I don't think anybody fully knows how Vince McMahon thinks and how his mind works, but JR's got a pretty good sense of it. So his perspective was an interesting one, especially when I was asking him about Roman Reigns. And he was talking about what he would do with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. He talked about the Freebirds going into the Hall of Fame. He's very familiar with Michael Hayes, even called some matches with him way back when Hayes was doing commentary. So it's a pretty cool interview. It was a thrill for me to be able to talk to JR. Hopefully one day we'll be able to get him back on. We can go like a full hour. I got a ton of questions I could just ask him all day long. So check it out. It's up on our YouTube channel. Give us a subscribe while you are there. But if you would rather stream it or download it, it is up on the feed as episode 428. That's why this is 429. And the New Japan show on Access Friday night, I thought was tremendous. They had two matches from May of last year, since there is a bit of a delay in terms of the matches they air. But one of them was an Intercontinental title match between Nakamura and Hirooki Goto, where Goto won the championship, and then there was a tag match that involved Okada and AJ Styles. Pretty good action to hear JR back in his element, just calling that kind of product. Josh Barnett, I think, is the perfect guy to play off of. I enjoy listening to him as well. I think you're going to enjoy it, especially if you're a fan of JR's work from many years ago. You're not big on app plugs and all this other bullshit that they have the announcers talking about constantly on Monday nights. It's a refreshing change. It's a refreshing change. So I would check that out. It airs on Access TV every Friday night, I believe at 9 p.m. is the time. Unfortunately, some sad news, and I hope I'm not mispronouncing his first name. It's either EG or IG. Izaki is the real name for Hayabusa. That's the name I, you know, am familiar with. He passed away on Thursday, 47 years old. Cause of death was a subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is a type of stroke that is caused by bleeding in the brain. Hayabusa was a big star in Japanese wrestling in the 90s. Spent most of his time off and on with the FMW promotion. Yeah, the FMW promotion, I knew the FMW promotion back when it was still alive, and I would hear about it, which wasn't very often, obviously, but still, you would hear about these things on the internet, even in its infancy. I knew it to be, you know, the barbed wire matches and the exploding C4 matches and stuff like that. It was crazy stuff. But they had a lot of talented guys who worked over there. Hayabusa was one of them, and that's where he spent most of his time. He did a lot of extreme types of matches like that, but he was also known for his high flying. And he influenced a lot of guys from the current generation. I mean, just take a look on Twitter, and you'll see all the messages from everybody in WWE. Some of them had the chance to meet him. WWE itself, I got to give them credit on their website. They had a very nice write-up about him. They didn't ignore it. I don't know if they'll acknowledge it on TV, but they put a very nice story up about him. He broke his neck in a match in 2001. He was trying a lion salt, and he slipped. He lost his footing on the middle rope, and he landed right on top of his head. He was paralyzed, spent much of the last 15 years in a wheelchair. Just a really nasty injury if you've seen it. And the saddest part about this whole thing to me, besides the fact that, you know, this guy died way too young, it's that last year, so the injury happened in 2001. Last year, he was finally able to walk to the ring unassisted. And it was, I don't know what promotion this was, but it was this great scene, and the video is probably still up on YouTube. All the wrestlers, they're you know, in the aisleway, surrounding the ring. They kind of help him up out of the wheelchair, and he walks on his own, no cane or anything, up the steps, into the ring. He took the microphone, he said a few words. It was pretty emotional stuff. And now here we are less than a year later. I think this happened in the fall of last year. And here we are now, and he's dead. And that sucks. The Stanford Advocate newspaper had a story up this week about WWE corporate salaries. This was amazing. The most interesting takeaway here is that there were three executives who made more than Vince McMahon did last year. Kevin Dunn being one of them. Kevin Dunn made $4.8 million last year. They actually rewarded him for that shaky cam bullshit. And Vince McMahon only, I put that in quotes, pulled $3.3 million last year. And we also learned this week, and I think I want to give credit to him because I think it came from him, from Chris Harrington at Mookie Ghana on Twitter. He was looking at WWE's financials and saw that Triple H's performer contract expires on March 31st and that the company is, quote, contemplating extending it. They're contemplating it. They put their world title on a guy whose contract runs out before WrestleMania. I hope he takes the title and signs with Evolve, since he's all chummy now with Gabe. Anyway, Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Nashville, Tennessee. Raw Instapoll, 1,670 votes, 87% thumbs down, 13% thumbs up. That may be the most lopsided poll we've done yet. This was not a good show. This was not a good show at all. And it also had no Shane McMahon, no Brock Lesnar, no Roman Reigns, who is at home convalescing from his nasal surgery. Interestingly, it sounds like he may not be back on Raw for a few weeks, which means he might be able to miss some of those cities I mentioned last week that were probably going to eat him alive. So lucky him. When I interviewed JR a few days ago, he said flat out, Roman needs to be a heel. And a lot of people have been saying that, but I wanted to get his perspective, because he's been in the trenches before. He's been part of those booking meetings. He's been part of those creative decisions. He's worked with Vince and all those guys, and they've had guys before. You know, what do? You kind of hit a point with them. Do you turn them? What do you do with them? And so from his perspective, he seems to be in agreement with a lot of other people, and I think Steve Austin has said the same thing. He thinks that Roman needs to become a villain, in his words. And he pitched the idea of a double turn at WrestleMania with Roman and Triple H, with Reigns aligning with Vince McMahon, and then maybe beating up not just Triple H, but beating up The Rock, who would, I guess in that scenario, be in Roman's corner. I like the idea of Roman aligning with Vince, even though it makes no sense. And Triple H is already a babyface on NXT. So it wouldn't be much of a stretch to look at Triple H, even corporate Triple H, as a babyface, since he gets cheered most of the time anyway. I would much rather Shane win control of the company in his match, and they just get rid of the authority altogether. That's just from my perspective. I don't want to see babyface Triple H in a program with Roman Reigns that extends beyond WrestleMania. I didn't ask for it at WrestleMania, but we're getting it, so I accept it. I don't want this to carry over beyond WrestleMania. I do agree that he needs a change. Absolutely, Roman needs a change. You know, Austin, on his podcast, made the comment, he said, to become a great babyface, you must first become a great heel. Now, that's not a universal rule, obviously. That doesn't apply to everybody if you look back in history. But I think there's a lot of truth to that. And especially for a guy who seems to be struggling, you know, there's just something missing with him and the fans. You know, I don't want to make it sound like with Roman on top, all the house shows are tanking and he's not selling any merchandise. Look, I'm sure he's doing well enough. But, in my mind, why just accept things for how they are? If he's getting booed in all these different cities and there's this... And it's not just the so-called internet fans. I don't buy that. I don't think it's just limited to a very vocal minority. You can't use the argument, well, it's just the IWC and, you know, it's not like, it's only when they go to New York and Chicago. Oh, really? Well, what about Philadelphia? And what about Boston? And what about LA? And what about Nashville? What about places like, it's like, I love the people who say, well, you know, New York is a smart crowd and Chicago, and that's true. You know, I might use, you know, a couple of those as the exceptions. You know, you never know what kind of reaction you're going to get there. You go to Toronto, and they love to say, oh, it's a bizarro world because all the heels get cheered and the baby faces get booed. But you can't say, you know, after a while when it happens in this city and that city and that city, and you can't say that after a while. I mean, if you just use that as an excuse after a while, that's half the cities in the country. That's a hell of a vocal minority right there. So there's something missing. There's something missing there, and that may be the missing ingredient. Austin may be right. To become a great babyface, sometimes you got to become a great heel first. I think, in the case of Roman Reigns, that's pretty fucking true. I think that could work out real well for him. Doesn't look very likely, with WWE supposedly having him pegged as the top babyface for the next three WrestleManias in 2016, 2017, and 2018. I mean, we know Vince changes his mind as much as he changes his underwear. At least I hope he does. But that's the long-term plan right now anyway, is that he's, you know, going forward next few WrestleManias. We want Roman on top. That's the plan. That's the goal. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. They set up a championship match with Triple H and Dean Ambrose at Roadblock here on the show. Roadblock is the name of the network special from Toronto next weekend. It's next Saturday. It's listed as a three-hour show. You know, Roadblock, because we're on the road to WrestleMania. Get it? They may as well just call it what it should be, which is WrestleMania. I mean, you know, Ambrose against Triple H, much more compelling main event to me than Roman Reigns against Triple H is right now. I mean, they've got another, 3 weeks or so to make that match interesting to me. Right now, I really don't care much about Reigns and Triple H. I care a hell of a lot more about Shane McMahon and The Undertaker as more of an attraction than I do their fucking championship main event. Ambrose and Triple H, at least to me, and I knew this going back to the Rumble, because when it came down to Triple H and Dean Ambrose, you know, part of it was, you know, at that point, Roman was out of the way, right? Because everybody in that Rumble match in that building that night hated Roman. Another city, Orlando. I guess Orlando's a smart city too, right? To go back to what I was saying before about everybody who loves to use that as an argument. Oh, Roman's doing fine. It's just the smart fans when they go into the smart cities. I'd love to see this list of smart cities that people are talking about here. I mean, New York and Chicago, those are gimmies. Okay, I'll give that to you. L.A.? Okay, maybe. But what about Orlando? What about Miami? What about all these other places? WrestleMania last year, that was in the Bay Area, in California. I guess that's another smart section of the country. Somebody needs to put together a map and highlight all of the supposedly smart cities. And hopefully at some point, the idiots who keep using that as a crutch and as an excuse will see that this supposed vocal minority is actually a hell of a lot bigger than they thought. So anyway, once Roman was out of the Rumble, people came unglued. They desperately wanted to see Dean Ambrose eke out that win against Triple H. Triple H went from being cheered to being booed when he would throw Ambrose out and they would tease that he was eliminated. And there were people cheering, you know, when Triple H won. I'm not going to say that he got showered in boos, but clearly people wanted to see Ambrose win a hell of a lot more than they wanted to see Reigns. And that wasn't just a Rumble thing. It's carried over. You saw a few weeks ago, Roman got booed to all hell on Raw when he was getting his ass kicked. When Ambrose got his ass kicked by Triple H on Raw, not so much. Triple H all of a sudden was the bad guy, and people wanted, you know, Dean Ambrose to rise up and fight back. He has a certain connection with the fans, and look, you may not think he's a main event guy. You may not look at Dean Ambrose and say, I can't picture this guy in the main event of WrestleMania. Roman Reigns I can, because Roman Reigns looks like a superhero, and he's got a cool tattoo, and he's got long hair, and he looks the part. He definitely looks the part, I'll give you that. But he's lacking a certain connection that somebody like Ambrose clearly has right now. And if you don't think so, you're in denial. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I don't know what show you're watching. It's pretty obvious. So, to me, that would be a more compelling main event at WrestleMania than the one they have right now. You've got Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt having a match at Roadblock. That match was originally scheduled for WrestleMania. They've added an NXT tag team title match to the show now. Dash and Dawson are going to defend against Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore, who should be on the main roster and are not yet on the main roster. So I look at that show and I say, just call it what it is. Call it WrestleMania. That's what it should be. I look at this show and I look at the TakeOver show in Dallas. And both of them have WrestleMania beat right now in terms of the actual cards. And I know the full WrestleMania card has not yet taken shape, but we can kind of see the direction they're going in, I think, for a lot of these matches. And these two other shows have Mania beat easily right now. Does Ambrose have a shot against Triple H? No, I don't believe he does. I don't believe he does. I expect a Brock Lesnar run-in or distraction or something to cost Dean the championship, and it makes sense. You know, Ambrose cost Lesnar the title at Fastlane with those chair shots. Heyman outright blamed Ambrose for the loss on Raw the next night. So Brock returns the favor here. There's no way that Triple H is losing that title before Roman gets a crack at it. Especially after the beatdown. Roman's going to come back in a couple of weeks. He's going to be looking for revenge. He hasn't gotten his revenge yet. His babyface revenge that I'm sure he'll get booed for. So they're not taking that title off Triple H. There will be no Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns for the title of WrestleMania like some people are emailing me asking me about. I don't think there's going to be a four-way with Ambrose and Lesnar shoehorned in there. You know, look, they need matches. With all the guys that got hurt, they need matches. They're not going to combine two of the three matches they've already got into one. Brock and Bray on this Roadblock show looks like another loss for Bray Wyatt, because I just don't see how you can beat Brock Lesnar before WrestleMania. You know, I think he might lose at WrestleMania. They've added the street fight stipulation. You can use weapons. So I think Dean Ambrose has a pretty good shot of walking out the winner in that match at Mania. But Brock losing beforehand, I don't think that's a good idea, and I don't see it happening. You know, he already lost at Fastlane, even though he wasn't pinned. You can't have him lose here. But does Bray Wyatt really need another loss? Kind of goes back to what I was saying about the Wyatt family last week. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me anymore. It's a shame. But you know what? Another Bray Wyatt loss? It's almost like, again, does it really hurt him that much at this point? How much does a loss really truly hurt Bray Wyatt, considering what they've done with that entire stable over the last few months? I could see the Wyatt family interfering for the cheap DQ. But a loss is a loss. And I think that's what Bray Wyatt is in for on Saturday. They also announced the Fabulous Freebirds will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame at long last. They are going to be inducted, most likely, it's not official, but most likely they're going to be inducted by Kevin Von Erich. The Freebirds and the Von Erichs feud in World Class, stuff of legend, easily the hottest thing in all of wrestling at that time. They're listing Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, Buddy Roberts, and Jimmy Garvin as the ones going in. Garvin was kind of a late addition to the Freebirds, but he's the only one still alive with Michael Hayes. Hayes has been with the company since 1995. They brought him in as an announcer. They called him Doc Hendricks. He looked ridiculous. Since then, he's become, he's like a vice president now, I think, within the company. He's become a big part of the creative team. Terry Gordy died in 2001 of a heart attack. He was never really the same. He had a stroke back in 93. He overdosed on a flight on a bunch of pain pills. Lapsed into a coma, suffered irreversible brain damage. You know, WWE brought him in as the executioner. He had one match on pay-per-view with The Undertaker. It wasn't very good, and then he was gone. But Gordy in his prime, Gordy was a Hall of Famer all by himself. I mean, he was one of the best big men in wrestling. Buddy Roberts, he died a few years ago. I know he battled throat cancer from what I read. I don't think that's what he died from, but I'm not 100% sure. So Hayes and Garvin are the two surviving members. They were in WWE briefly, the Freebirds were. Not Jimmy Garvin, but the other three. They didn't last very long. They left or were fired soon after. Depends on what story you believe. So the bulk of their work really would be with Mid-South, with World Class, and with the NWA. The Freebird Rule, which the New Day now uses, that originated with, obviously, the Freebirds. That's why it's called the Freebird Rule. So when they were the tag team champions, they would rotate the different members of their team who would defend the belts. It would be, you know, two different guys every night. But I do want to address something here on the Freebird stuff. And it kind of ties in with something that happened this week that was very weird. I was getting tons of messages, and there were Facebook posts in our group, and this big controversy involving me and Don Tony from the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show. Look, I don't know what the hell happened. It's like everything went straight to hell this week, and I'm getting all these messages, and, ooh, is there beef? Is there beef? I don't know where all this is coming from, but I'll just put this to bed right here and now. I don't know what anybody is talking about when they talk about beef. There was never any beef. Certainly not from my end, and I assume not his end. You know, I've mentioned him and his show on this podcast a few times. In fact, when they went over to Radio Influence, which I think was only just a couple of months ago, if you remember, I congratulated them and gave them a nice plug. It was the night that they were doing their first show on there. And, you know, I've mentioned him a few times before. He actually floated a restaurant recommendation because apparently he doesn't live very far from where I am. And so on Twitter once, he was recommending a bunch of restaurants to me. And, you know, it's like, oh, there's beef between the two of you. It's this like manufactured controversy that people create, I guess, for drama or whatever. And anyway, I don't know what happened. Apparently, I guess a clip from a podcast that I did 2 years ago was played on their show. It was part of like a friendly debate, and people took it the wrong way, and it involved the Freebirds and some kind of discussion about the Freebirds and the Shield. And I, look, all I can say is there are no issues. There is no beef. There is no rivalry. There is nothing. I'm sorry to say, you know, people, I guess, are looking for something here, but there's nothing. And honestly, I can't say that I have any kind of beef with any podcaster. The only thing I've ever had, I had an issue with one podcaster once a few years ago who made some derogatory comments about my listeners, and I stuck up for my listeners. Other than that, I've never had an issue with anybody. That's the only time there was ever any kind of issue, and I took care of that because I thought that was bullshit, and I put that person in their place, and that was the end of it. So, aside from that, I've never had any issues with anybody. And so that's it. That's all I could say, just to kind of put that to bed, hopefully, once and for all. You know, you got a lot of great shows out there. You got a lot of shows that have a lot of listeners. There's a lot of crossover there. There's no doubt about that. I know a lot of people who listen to this show listen to his show, and vice versa. It's almost like, well, there can only be one. Like, no, there can actually be a lot. And so I don't really see what the problem is here. I have respect for any podcaster who goes out there and every single week they put their time and effort into putting out a 1-hour show, a 2-hour show, whatever it is, every single week. for their audience. Because I know how much time and effort it takes to do that. It takes up a lot of time. And when things don't go right, you have to deal with technical issues, or the download link doesn't work, or the audio sounds like shit, or whatever the problem is, and you're getting messages from people, and you just spent 2 hours of your life, or 3 hours of your life, or whatever it is, working on something only for to get people, well, it doesn't work, and how come this and that, and it drives you nuts. I have a lot of respect for anybody who's willing to do that, because I've been down that road before, and I know how hard it is. And look, you know, I just gave praise at the beginning of this week's show to good mic work. Guy did a 6-hour WrestleMania retrospective video on his YouTube channel. Put a lot of frickin' time and work into that. And hopefully people will go listen to it. I have respect for anybody who does that. And that includes, you know, Don Tony, and he's no exception. You know, he does multiple shows every week. Some with a co-host, some without. Talks about, you know, whatever topics may be of interest to him and his audience. It's a different type of show. That doesn't make it better or worse. It's a different type of show. I don't understand this nonsense about how there's only room for one. There can be only one. What is this, fucking Highlander? I mean, give me a break. Anyway, hopefully that puts an end to that, and we can move on, and we can all live in peace and harmony here. Because there really is nothing to see here. It was just much ado about nothing. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch were having a good match on the show, and then they did the double pin finish, which we only saw a few weeks ago with Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe on NXT. That one was done well. This one was not. This looked awful. They were on top of the top rope. Sasha went for a sunset flip powerbomb. For some reason, she laid back on the mat. Like she went over, she hit the move, and it was made out like she maybe knocked herself out or something, except she didn't. And they made sure to show us 3 replays that clearly showed that nothing happened. She just laid down. And Becky's feet were draped over her body, and Becky herself was flat on her back, and so the ref counted 3. And Lillian Garcia then announces, and I quote, "The following contest is a draw." Oh, Lillian. You know what's funny about that? I got that buy or sell question last week on Ring Announcers, and I said I can't take Lillian Garcia really to task too much for her botches over the years without doing the same thing for Michael Buffer, because he fucked up a whole bunch of times. I was like defending Lillian Garcia in a way. And here we got another botch by her 24 hours after that show. It's just, lived up to her reputation here, that's for sure. Anyway, they had a rematch on SmackDown that ended in a double DQ, and so at WrestleMania it will indeed be a triple threat match between Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha for the Divas title. And I'm totally fine with that. I think all 3 of them deserve to be in a highlight match at WrestleMania. I'm happy for them. This will be the first WrestleMania for all 3 of them. They're in a championship match. That should be the best women's match on a WrestleMania show since Trish and Mickey at WrestleMania 22. There's really no reason for it not to be. So the drought is almost over. Just got to wait until April 3rd. The Miz pinned Dolph Ziggler in about a minute with a surprise roll-up out of nowhere. Ziggler beat Miz in less than a minute with a backslide on SmackDown. An amazing feud this is. They are competing to see who the biggest loser is in WWE. Maybe they can add Bray Wyatt and make it a triple threat at WrestleMania since he has nothing better to do. They celebrated the fact that they just passed 10 million subscribers on YouTube. This is my golf clap here. No, that's a big achievement. 10 million subscribers on YouTube is a big deal. But I just think, you know, 10 million subscribers on YouTube, and yet only 1 million subscribers for their network, and 3 million people watching their TV show. Now, if only they could find a way to convert those other 7 million, they would be in great shape. Not with shows like this, they won't, I'll tell you that. Chris Jericho and AJ Styles beat The New Day. Then they challenged them to a match for the tag team titles this Monday in Chicago. All I can say is, watch your back, AJ. I think we see the turn tomorrow night. I saw they have a new Y2 AJ shirt up on WWE Shop. That's cute. I'm not buying it, though. Literally, also, I'm not buying it. I think the turn happens tomorrow night. Tyler on Twitter wanted to mention this. He said that he wants Jericho and AJ to remain a team for a while because he doesn't want the New Day to face the League of Nations or WrestleMania. Now, neither do I, believe me. That is not a match that appeals to me. Here's what I think is actually going to happen if I have to make a prediction here. I'm going to make this prediction. I think that Jericho turns on Styles tomorrow night, not the other way around. Just because, you know, if you know the Jericho character, especially over the last several years. I mean, he's been a babyface for the last few years, but it just doesn't fit that, you know, Styles would basically show him up, is what he did. You know, he beat Jericho two matches to one or whatever it was, and he kind of showed him up. And Jericho was overly complimentary of him a few weeks ago. You're the best. You're phenomenal. And they shook hands. And I'm just thinking, this does not fit the Chris Jericho character at all. Something's coming. And I think it happens tomorrow night. So I think he turns on him. That leads to one more match between them at WrestleMania. So that's what Styles and Jericho are going to do. What they also end up doing is a fatal four-way for the tag team titles with New Day defending against the League of Nations, some variation of the League of Nations. Maybe it's Sheamus and Rusev or whatever the combo is. The Usos and the Dudley Boys. And I think the Dudleys are walking out with the belts, which they would promote as their, I guess in WWE, they're calling them 9-time champions, so this would be their 10th tag team title reign. Big win for them at WrestleMania. I've thought this for a while now, that they were saving the Dudleys' win for WrestleMania, ever since the October network special from Madison Square Garden, where they fought the New Day and they lost. And after that, they continued to lose. They lost, and they lost, and they lost to New Day over and over again. And I just thought, well, they must be saving it for WrestleMania then. And I believe they are. And then they can continue their feud with the Usos, I'm sure. And the Usos will probably get the belts back in the end, and the Dudleys will put them over. But to put them over, for the Dudleys to put anybody over, and for it to mean anything, you've got to build the Dudleys back up first after all those losses. You know, they needed to turn heel after all those losses. They turn heel. Now they need to win. Otherwise, the Usos beating them in the end doesn't mean shit. So that's how I think things are going to play out. The Undertaker segment on the show. What a frickin' letdown this was. Not even an attempt to offer any kind of explanation for why the Undertaker would just readily accept such a match. You would think somebody who's been around for as long as he has and all the issues he's had with Vince McMahon over the years that he would, you know, I don't know, show anger or something, or nope, nothing. He just, you know, his entrance took longer than his actual speech. He just grabbed Vince McMahon by the throat. He said, "The blood of your son is on your hands at WrestleMania," and he left. A man of few words. I thought it would have been cool for him to say something like, you know, "At WrestleMania, I take away your firstborn," and then Vince McMahon just no-sells it and says, "You can have him." You know, but he literally walked out, said a few words, and disappeared to the back. Not a bad way to earn a paycheck. And Vince then talks about how at WrestleMania, Shane would no longer be a son. He would be a son of a bitch. I thought that was actually a great line. Oh, well, first of all, I just hope that doesn't mean that we're getting the Linda McMahon response this week. We don't need to bring her into things. It's funny, I can't believe. I think back to WrestleMania 2000. A McMahon in every corner. Remember that? That's how they promoted the main event. It wasn't Rock versus Triple H versus The Big Show versus Mick Foley. It was a McMahon in every corner. It was all about the McMahons. And here we are 16 years later going into WrestleMania. And again, it's all about the McMahons. Think about how ridiculous that would have sounded to your younger self if you could go back in time. If you can hop into the DeLorean and go back to the year 2000. Okay. Yeah, you know, and I said to you, hey, 16 years from now, it's going to be all about the McMahons and Vince and Shane and Stephanie. You know, it's the same way you would feel now if I told you that in 16 years from now. So what would that be? That would be 16 from where we are, 2032. If I told you that in 2032, at WrestleMania 48, that the main storyline would involve Vince McMahon, Shane McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, and Triple H, I don't really think you would be overly enthusiastic about that. I know I wouldn't. But the sad thing is, I could totally see that happening. Dean Ambrose beat Alberto Del Rio by DQ in the main event when the League of Nations ran in for the DQ. What a great finish that was. Triple H came out. Ambrose fought back. He ended up getting laid out by a pedigree. As everybody does, ultimately. It's like your rite of passage in WWE. You have to be laid out by a Triple H pedigree. So Triple H took him outside, punched him repeatedly over and over again. More shaky cam here with every single punch, up and down, up and down, up and down. I'm starting to wonder if the name of Xavier Woods' Up, Up, Down, Down channel on YouTube isn't really just one big rib on Kevin Dunn. Up and down, up and down, up and down with this fucking camera work. The biggest takeaway from this show for me, or from this segment, I should say, is how the crowd reacted. They booed Triple H and they cheered Dean Ambrose. They rooted for Dean Ambrose. They wanted him to fight back, and ultimately Triple H conquered him, and he was booed like the villain that they want him to be. All it took to get Triple H booed was to put him in there against the babyface that people actually want to see. What an amazing concept.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, this was the final show from the CFE Arena. The Vaudevillains beat Hugo Knox and Tucker Knight to open the show. Emma beat Santana Garrett with the Emma Lock. In the building live, Santana was very popular because she lives in Orlando. And I think some people probably recognized her maybe from TNA. And again, we were in Orlando, so that probably played a role in part of that. But it came across on TV also. Lots of Santana chants during the match. People were really into her. She sold and sold and sold. Didn't really get much offense in before Emma finished her off. She looked, you know, she looked decent for what they had her do, but the thing is, she didn't do much. William Regal informed Eva Marie and Nia Jax that next week they will face Bayley and Asuka. He then headed for the ring. Very special announcement. He said at NXT they scour the world for the best talent. And here, making his debut, was NXT's latest signee, the greatest man who ever lived, Austin Aries. He didn't have a chance to do much more than pose in the aisleway before Baron Corbin ran out and attacked him from behind. Laid him out on the floor with the End of Days. He ripped off Aries' shirt, threw it at Regal, which nailed him right in the face. Tell you what, if NXT was about who has the best aim, Corbin would be the world champion. And I can tell you this, in the building, people were pissed when this happened. They were fucking furious that they treated Aries like a chump in his very first appearance. They didn't even let him speak. He never even got into the ring. I'm of the opinion, watching it now, you know, on TV, and even that night, I wasn't, like, pissed about it. It's not what I would have done. But watching it on TV, you know, I'm of the opinion, it sets up his first program. It's a big win for him, hopefully, over Baron Corbin at the next TakeOver show. I actually like Corbin's gimmick, where he just hates all indie guys. I think it's hilarious. And he did, you know, Corbin did put Regal on notice a few weeks ago when Regal refused to give him a shot at the NXT title, so it furthers their storyline with him ruining Regal's big announcement. Made sense in that respect. So, watching it back on TV, I didn't mind this. Like I said, not the way I would have handled Austin Aries' first appearance, but I don't think it hurt him either. The Drifter came out for a match, and I drifted off to the bathroom to take care of some business. I didn't even hit the pause button. When I came back, he won the match with a spinning neck breaker. I don't really have anything more to say than that. Next week, back at Full Sail, besides that women's tag team match, we're getting a 2 out of 3 falls match between Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe to finally determine a number one contender for the NXT title at TakeOver. Speaking of Zayn, I see reports that he is on his way down to the main roster very soon. He is scheduled to be on the card at WrestleMania. Doing what? We don't know yet. They could shoot an angle with him and Kevin Owens on that Roadblock special next weekend to set up an Intercontinental title match, which is something that I pitched many, many, many months ago, and I think they absolutely should do. But he could just as easily be put in the Andre Battle Royal. Okay, and we see how well that worked out for Hideo Itami last year. Because believe me, even if he didn't hurt his shoulder, it wasn't like that Battle Royal appearance was going to do wonders for that guy's career. So I'm taking a wait-and-see approach until I see something concrete. Then I'll get excited about this. They should do Zayn and Owens, but I don't see any sort of confirmation of that anywhere. So we'll see what happens. Main event was a hell of a match here between Finn Balor and Neville. Fine way to end these tapings. Interestingly, Tom Phillips and Corey Graves on commentary acknowledged all of the Bullet Club rumors, and they were talking about how Balor's friends may be on their way, which almost makes me think that when they do show up, they may turn on Balor. And maybe that's just my wrestling fan instinct kicking in, you know, whatever they seem to be teasing, think the opposite. But I just thought that was kind of odd that, you know, they've been silent about it and maybe save it as a surprise or whatever. And here the announcers are just openly acknowledging, hey, these guys may be coming in. I mean, it's not like Balor isn't teasing it on his Twitter and his Instagram all the time, but that's the first time they've really said that on TV. I mean, otherwise, why even bring it up unless these guys were coming in to turn on Balor? Match started off slow, built from there. These two guys are just fantastic. It was actually their match in New Japan. It was back in 2012. That Regal showed Triple H a tape of their match, or a DVD, I guess it would have been. I still say tape. I'm still a VHS guy. Could be a new t-shirt. I'm a VHS guy. But he showed Triple H a tape of that match, and it led to Neville getting a contract. So we already knew these two would work well together. This was not a surprise. It made me miss, though, seeing Neville in NXT in any kind of just a meaningful match, like in any kind of meaningful role. This wasn't for the championship, but this was a main event match, and Neville's a main event level performer. You may not think so in terms of his size or his charisma or his promo ability, but in terms of his work, he's as good as anybody in this company. You know, it was good to see him here at a featured match. There really is no good reason for them to be booking Kalisto the way they are and not start something with him and Neville for WrestleMania. You know, it's just, I look at what's going on now. We still have a few more weeks. I'm not even sure Kalisto's going to be defending the U.S. title. And even if he is, it'll probably be another fucking match with Del Rio or something. You know, it's like they're completely bankrupt of actual creative ideas for anybody other than Roman Reigns. It's just like, come on, you got this talented guy. He's got a singles title. He could do both. He could team with Sin Cara, and he could defend his championship. He could, you know, not on the same show, but I just mean in terms of what you have this guy doing. Kalisto's another guy, very talented, fun to watch. Started to get over, but now how is he supposed to get over beyond where he's at if he's just positioned right back where he was before? He's got a belt, but he's just doing tag team matches and six-man tags with Sin Cara. Who gives a fuck? All the work that they put in with John Cena and that U.S. title and making it mean something. I mean, you knew the minute that Cena lost it to somebody else who wasn't a main eventer, it wasn't going to have quite the level of cachet it had before, but the idea should have been, let's get this title on somebody else who can kind of carry the torch forward, still make the title meaningful, still make it something that's sought after and important, and maybe we could even use this title, which now has some value, to help get Kalisto over to the next level. And it was like they were starting to do that, kind of, but not really. It's almost like they were afraid to commit to doing it, and now they've just given up. I mean, the guy has the belt, but what are they doing with him? Why is he not being set up for something with Neville or anybody for WrestleMania? It's like, what happened to the U.S. title? All that work, all that effort, all those weeks of matches, it was for nothing. Running dropkick by Balor. Bloody Sunday, Brainbuster, DDT for the win. Both men shook hands after the match. And that was NXT. A fine show. They did end the show with a interview backstage. Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe were being interviewed about their match next week, and Samoa Joe has vowed to vanquish the very ungrateful Sami Zayn. If you remember, it was Samoa Joe when he made his debut who did so, coming to the rescue of Sami Zayn. And Sami Zayn turned out to be quite the ungrateful son of a bitch. And so Joe is going to take away his opportunity next week to become the number one contender and become the first two-time NXT champion. I'm looking forward to that match. Now, there was a report floating around online. I don't know where this report originated. I don't know how credible it is. But it claims that there is a difference of opinion right now between Vince McMahon and Triple H on how and when to debut Finn Balor on the main roster. Vince supposedly wants to debut Balor as early as tomorrow night on Raw, with Karl Anderson and Doc Gallows. Triple H feels that debuting Balor now, while he still has the NXT title, would devalue the title. Like it doesn't matter to him, and being on Raw is more important, I guess. I don't know if I buy this, but let's say there's truth to this whole report, okay? I've got to side with Vince on this one. If they debuted Balor tomorrow night, or if they debuted him at Roadblock next weekend, or Raw the week after that, it doesn't diminish the NXT title at all, unless, and this is the key, unless they bring him up only to have him lose. They did that with Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens came in, he beat John Cena his first night in, and then he lost to John Cena. The good old parody booking, right? You win, now you win. So Kevin Owens now lost to John Cena. He did stay competitive. They had two great matches. He was competitive with the top name or one of the top names in the company. You can make that argument. And so there's no shame in losing, right? But I'm of the belief that a loss is a loss. This guy is supposedly your NXT champion. He's like the world champion of NXT. He's got the belt. You bring him up, he shouldn't be losing. He shouldn't be losing, at least not until he drops the belt. He should not be losing. Seth Rollins. Look at Seth Rollins last year. He lost match after match after match after match while he was the world champion. Remember, what was his win-loss record on TV? It was something horrendous for like the month of September or something. It was like 1-8 or something like that. And he's the world champion. He is supposed to be the top guy in your company. I think Seth Rollins' title reign is hardly going to be remembered as anything special. Beating your world champion is a terrible idea, unless it sets up a championship match for the person who beats them. If just random people are beating your world champion, why even have a world champion? Maybe Triple H remembers what happened with Kevin Owens last year and how he was booked. And again, I don't want to make it sound like Kevin Owens was buried or booked poorly. He debuted on his first night and beat John Cena. He had two pay-per-view matches in a row with John Cena. The second one he lost, but it was still a very competitive back-and-forth match. He was hardly buried. But I'm just saying, maybe Triple H thinks back to Kevin Owens, who was one of his prized fighters from NXT. And he had the NXT title at the time that he lost. He didn't drop it to Balor until the Japan special in July. So when he lost, he was the NXT champion. So maybe he's a little gun-shy about this because he doesn't want the same thing to happen again. He doesn't feel Balor should be losing as long as he's got that NXT title. And if that's the thought process, then I would agree with him. I think that's a valid concern for him to have. And he just doesn't want the same thing to happen to Balor because Balor is a special guy. He's a special performer. But who knows? This is all speculation. If they debut Balor and keep him strong until he drops the title, you know, maybe to Samoa Joe at TakeOver, I don't have a problem with that. But I think it's not hard to think that maybe Triple H sees how some of his guys are booked on the main roster. I could use Tyler Breeze as an example. Tyler Breeze was never going to be booked as a main eventer. But maybe he looks at a guy like Tyler Breeze who, look, I'm sure he liked Tyler Breeze a lot. He put a lot into him, and he was a big part of NXT for a while, and he came up, and he sees what happened with Breeze. You know, even then, there was a report that Triple H had a difference of opinion with Vince on that as well. That's why I think there may be some credibility to this. This is not the first time we've heard about these differences of creative opinion between him and Vince on these NXT guys, and at the time, the report was that Triple H saw Tyler Breeze as being kind of a Dolph Ziggler-level performer, and I'm not so sure that's a good thing either, but he's not even that. Think about that. Think about the way Dolph Ziggler's been booked. He's not even at that level. So I think Triple H has a right to be worried. But as far as devaluing the title, as long as he's not booked to be a loser, I don't think it devalues the title at all. If anything, I think it kind of ups the prestige of it to have that champion show up with the belt on Raw. And if they have an idea for Finn Balor, you know what? Call him up. We need some new blood. Call him up. Before we talk Ring of Honor, I want to mention that Mania Crawl is back April 3rd, WrestleMania weekend in Dallas. All the money raised goes toward Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital. They have teamed up with Uber to be the official designated driver of the event. You can use the code MANIACRAWL16 for your first ride free, up to $20. Every ride taken with their code, Uber will donate $5 towards Connor's Cure. The first 100 people in attendance at Mania Crawl will get a free Mania Crawl koozie. For more information, check them out on Twitter and Instagram at Mania Crawl or at maniacrawl.com. Ring of Honor this past week opened with Silas Young and the Beer City Bruiser against the boys, Dalton Castle's boys. Dalton Castle came out of the crowd to attack Silas before the match in their never-ending feud. He got taken away by security. So confident was Silas Young that he could beat the boys that he said if his team lost the match, he would leave Ring of Honor. Thankfully, that did not happen. I like Silas. I like Silas. He looks like something out of There Will Be Blood, but that's what I like about him. I also like the Beer City Bruiser. The dude can go for a guy that big. Giant cannonball by the Bruiser into the corner to one of the boys. Silas pulled the boy. I'll call him the boy. I think they're the Tate twins, right? Is that was that the name they were using before they got this gimmick? I still don't know their individual names, though. Maybe, oh, actually, it might be, I think Karina mentioned it on TV a few weeks ago. Is it like Mike and Brett or something? Or Matt and Brett, I think, are their names? Whichever one it was, Silas pulled him into the center of the ring and covered him for the win. Dalton Castle did run back out after the match, but he got beaten down by the heels. Brian Fury versus Action Ortiz in a semifinal match in the Ring of Honor Top Prospect Tournament. Action Ortiz is the heavy guy who used an inhaler in the middle of his match a few weeks ago. Fury got the win with a pop-up powerbomb, which was impressive to do on an opponent that size. I could have sworn the announcers at one point claimed that Fury had 17 years of experience in the business. 17 years! And he's in a Top Prospect Tournament. Okay, then. Next week, he will meet the winner of this match in the tournament finals, Leo Rush against Punisher Martinez. You have to see the visual of these two standing next to each other. Martinez looked 10 feet tall standing next to Leo Rush. They are positioning Leo as the underdog. He is pretty talented. He's fun to watch. Punisher Martinez, I got to give this guy credit too. He's a big guy, but he's real good. He even did a running dive over the top rope, over the post, out to the floor onto Leo Rush at one point. Looked like he killed himself. I enjoyed this match. I actually really did. I enjoyed this match. Martinez was punishing him with move after move. See what I did there? Punishing him, right? Because his name is the... Ah, forget it. Martinez tried for a top rope chokeslam on the little guy. Rush reversed it in midair into what looked to me like a Spanish fly. They didn't call it that, but I think that's what it was. And he got the win. So it'll be Leo Rush against Brian Fury in the finals next week. Adam Cole against Reborn Matt Sydal in the main event. Real good match. Final sequence, super kick by Cole. Jumping knee strike from Sydal. Cole followed that up with two super kicks because one is never enough. I like to think that every time a wrestler uses a super kick as a setup move and not a finish, a single tear runs down Shawn Michaels' face from his lazy eye. Cole picks up Sydal, but he counters with a reverse hurricanrana. Cole lands right on top of his head. Sydal goes up top for the shooting star press, and he gets the win. And that surprised me. I did not see that coming. I did not expect a clean win over Adam Cole like that, but come to think of it, I have absolutely no idea who Jay Lethal's next opponent could be, because it seems like he's ran through practically all the baby faces on that roster, except for Dalton Castle. So maybe they're going to set up Matt Sydal for the next title shot. Actually, you know what? Dalton Castle makes a lot of sense. Dalton Castle is super popular, and right now it just feels like he's running on fumes with the Silas Young stuff. I said before, it's like the never-ending feud, and it is. It's been going on for month after month after month, and I enjoyed it, but it's like it's time to move on. And so if you move on, what does he do? What do you do with Dalton Castle, as popular as he is? I think they should go to Jay Lethal and Dalton Castle next for the championship. That should be the next big program. I think that could be a lot of fun. Lucha Underground. This was episode 6. We are we're streaming along here this season. Speaking of streaming, it's a great segue. Lucha Underground is now available in iTunes. You can buy the entire first season, all 39 episodes in HD, $44.99. Or you can buy the individual episodes. I think they're $2.99. The pricing's a little bit lower if you don't mind it in standard def, if you want to be cheap and not go for HD. Season 2 is also up there. You can buy the season package. You'll get all the episodes you've missed so far, and then every episode remaining in Season 2. It's really cool. Look, if you don't have a way to access Lucha Underground and you don't want to go searching around on the internet for it, you no longer have an excuse. I guess unless you are an Android guy, and then maybe you don't have iTunes, then maybe you do have an excuse. But everybody else, you have no excuse. Go up in the iTunes store and download these episodes. And if you've never seen the show before, do yourself a favor. Start with Season 1. And it's going to be the best $44.99 you'll ever spend. Mil Muertes spoke for the first time on this show this week. And listening to him speak, probably a good idea to never let that happen again. He was backstage in front of some kind of shrine. He summoned Katrina. He was angry with her for allowing Prince Puma and Pentagon to fight one another, as they will tonight here on the show, but not allowing them to fight him. And she reminded Mill that she's known him since he was a little boy. Which is an interesting line, seeing as how she doesn't look that old. So apparently Katrina is the devil. She is the devil incarnate. She also calls him by his real name here, Pascual Mendoza. He grabs her by the throat and lifts her off the ground and says he wants Puma and Pentagon. And Katrina says no. And the lights go out for a brief moment. When they come back on, Katrina is gone and Mill is just standing there moaning like he just finished a three-hour Raw. His acting here was horrendous, I have to say. I love Mil Muertes, but he should never be allowed to speak again. He needs to go back to looking mean and keeping his mouth shut. He's way more mysterious that way. Sexy Star and Cobra Moon had a terrible match. This was not a good way to start this show. They had a bad, bad match. This was the edited version. So I was completely distracted watching this because of all the jump cuts and the edits. Imagine how much worse this match must have been live. This was the edited version, and it was still terrible. Marty the Moth showed up. He distracted Sexy Star. That allowed Cobra Moon to lock in her Dragon Sleeper for the tap out. Not good. We got another Famous B ad. He wants to help make you famous. They flashed a phone number on the screen. 423-GET-FAME. I called it. It's a legit number. You get Famous B's voicemail. You can leave him a message. I called and told him I had a racist friend named Noah and gave him his phone number. That was fun. We then see Dragon Azteca Jr. watching the same Famous B ad that we just saw on TV. When Rey Mysterio shuts it off and he scolds him for watching television. All I could think is, what is he, his dad? Yeah, I'm starting to think that maybe that's really a grown-up Dominic under that Dragon Azteca mask. Pentagon Jr. and Prince Puma. This was a fun match. We even got a Canadian destroyer from Pentagon at one point, which Matt Stryker referred to as a Mexican destroyer, which I guess would be more accurate. Only a two count. How the hell is that move only good for a near fall? This is one of the things I hate about wrestling. Absolutely can't stand. Why even do moves like that if you're just going to kick out of them? Am I the only one who feels this way? People tell me all the time, you got to watch PWG. You got to watch PWG. And I haven't, and I want to. And hopefully one day I will. But I wonder if PWG is like that. Ring of Honor can be like that. All these promotions, they're all guilty of the same thing. Right? I love Lucha Underground. But when I see stuff like that, it's like, goddamn. I mean, a Canadian destroyer is not enough for the win? I don't know. Mil Muertes came down. He ripped his sling off, so either his arm is fully healed now or they've got pain pills in strong supply over there in Boyle Heights. He gets into the ring. He destroys Pentagon and Puma before laying them both out with a double flatliner. Backstage with Katrina after the match, Mil declares that next week he will defend his championship against both Prince Puma and Pentagon Jr. We also learned from Matt Stryker that Aztec Warfare is back in 3 weeks. The winner gets a shot at the Lucha Underground Championship. The first Aztec Warfare was a match of the year candidate. It was fucking awesome. I said at the time, they did the Royal Rumble better than WWE does the Royal Rumble, which is especially true if you look at the Royal Rumble over the last 3 years. So if this Aztec Warfare is anything like the first one they did, we're in for a treat. Phoenix and King Cuerno, ladder match for the Gift of the Gods title here in the main event. Mil Muertes is back on his throne for this one. And I don't mean the shitter. He's not sitting up there reading the paper. It's a literal throne. There is something that bothered me during this match. Again, I hate to keep picking on them like this, but it's been happening on the show for a few weeks now, and I'm not picking on these two guys at all. It's not their fault. It looks like, or it sounds like, And I could be wrong. Maybe these guys are just that good. They're slapping the thigh and they're making these great noises. But it sounds like they're adding in sound effects when certain guys hit super kicks on the other. I've noticed this for a few weeks now. It's like a loud smack, but much louder than usual. It sounds like a gunshot going off. I really want them to stop doing that. It just sounds ridiculous to me. I know this is a show with devils and demons and time travelers, so there's a lot of ridiculous things on this show, but for whatever reason, this bothered me. It just seems completely unnecessary. It's like when WWE adds that stupid sound effect in when somebody used to like get hit in the head with the ring bell, they'd add a ringing bell sound. It sounded so fake. It sounded like the crowd on SmackDown any given week. Completely phony and contrived. And I don't think they need to do that here. Otherwise, this was a really good match. I suggest you watch it. It's up on iTunes, in fact, right now. Phoenix did win the championship back. Mil Muerte stood up from his throne looking none too pleased and held up his title while Phoenix stood on top of the ladder holding up his title. I very much like this feud. This is like a blood feud between these two guys. It goes all the way back to Grave Consequences, which was, my match of the year last year. And I look forward to seeing these two guys in the ring again. So that was Lucha Underground. We now can get to your questions. How's that sound? Mailbag questions. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Jonathan from Orlando. Do you see Kane or Jesse Ventura or any other wrestler from the past or present running for president in the future? Well, it's funny you mentioned Jesse Ventura. I was reading a story the other day. Apparently, he's thinking about running in this election. So you may get Jesse the Body back in politics in very short order here. Guess he's making up his mind right now. You know what? It couldn't be any worse than the frickin' clown show that's running right now, so why not? Rhino is somebody I wanted to bring up here because he's not running for president, although maybe he should. But he's running for office as a state representative in Michigan. WWE.com had a whole interview up with him. You know, he lives in Michigan. He might have grown up there. I don't know. But he's running as a state representative. So Rhino now is officially a politician. Who knew? There's some politicians in wrestling who should run for office. Philly from Houston. Why did Hulk Hogan refuse to put Steve Austin over at WrestleMania 18, but seemed okay with putting over The Rock and even raising his hand? To me, it makes more sense that if you have to lose, you may as well lose to the best. I don't know where you're getting your information from, but I think that's complete bullshit. There's no evidence that Hulk Hogan did not want to put over Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think the issue stems from why did they not have a match? And the belief is that they didn't have a match because Austin did not want to have the match. If Steve Austin was enthusiastic about wrestling Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania that year, there is absolutely no way that Vince McMahon would not have put that match together. That was the match to do. There was a reason that match didn't happen. And, you know, the belief, after all these years, has always been, from what I understand, that, you know, Austin did not want the match. And Austin's talked about before. There was a period of time where he didn't think it was a good idea. He didn't want to face Hogan. He didn't think they'd have a good match. He didn't want to embarrass himself. All these different reasons. And there was some heat there because back when Austin was still with WCW, I think he wanted to work a match or a program with Hogan and pitched it to Bischoff, and he was rejected. Hogan didn't want to work with him. And Austin was not as big of a star as he would become later on. You know, he was, you know, a decently big star in WCW, but not like he wasn't in the main events or anything. So I think it kind of stemmed from that. Hogan refusing to lose to Austin, that's not something I've ever heard. That's not something I've ever heard. Now, I'm not saying if they didn't put the match together that Hogan wouldn't have played politics, because he did have creative control built into his contract. But there's no evidence, there's no proof that if they actually wanted to make the match, that Hogan was going to play his political card. Now, maybe Austin was worried about that. Maybe Austin was like, you know what, I'm not getting involved here because, you know, if I do, and then Hogan doesn't want to do a job, I'm not going to lose to him. And so, but that's speculation. I don't know what was going through Austin's head on why he didn't want the match. But that was always my understanding, is that it could have been his, and he didn't really want it, and it went to Rock instead. Brian from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I just watched Marty Jannetty's first match in WCW back in January of 98 on the network. Do you think it was just a coincidence they decided to name Jannetty's superkick the Showstopper? Or was this a direct dig at Shawn Michaels? Well, it was no coincidence, put it that way. Also, what are your thoughts on the NWO Wolfpack? I always liked the concept, but the pairing of Sting, Nash, Luger, and Savage was always very odd to me, considering the history between WCW and the NWO. I didn't hate the Wolfpack, but I didn't like that Sting was part of it. Sting never should have joined the NWO. Any incarnation. Black and white, red, blue, fucking purple with pink polka dots, all the different versions of the NWO that they had, he never should have joined. It just was, it was wrong. It felt wrong. It was wrong. It just didn't feel right. I didn't like that. Daryl from Hartford, Connecticut. Which situation's fallout will continue to damage or loom over WWE in the long term more? The absence of WCW or the death of Chris Benoit and the concussion lawsuits? Well, I guess if you're speaking in literal terms, I guess those concussion lawsuits are going to be hanging over them for a while. But to me, it's the death of WCW. What happened with Benoit was absolutely horrible. But there were some positives that came out of that, right? In terms of the wellness program, in terms of them taking concussions more seriously. They definitely have a very serious concussion policy now, whereas before there was none. They had no concussion policy whatsoever. Now they do. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with what happened with Benoit. The death of WCW, to me, is what will continue to cause damage and loom over WWE more than anything else. And I just did a whole column about this. I don't know if that's why you sent this question in, but I did a column a few days ago for TJR Wrestling. It's up there if you want to read it. Because this is the 15-year anniversary this month of the final Nitro and the death of WCW. And the ghost of WCW, in my opinion, still looms large over WWE. That was the headline I gave the article. I was talking about some of the negative things about WCW there at the end, but I tried to be positive and talk about a lot of the positive things about WCW that I miss. And this is coming from, you know, someone who was a loyal WWF fan back then. I wouldn't even watch WCW in the mid-90s, and then the Monday Night Wars came along, and all of a sudden it was, you know, you couldn't help but flip between the two shows. And I miss that. I miss that competition. I think every wrestling fan, even the ones who are young right now and don't know really much of WCW, they don't know it, but they miss WCW too. Because I think a lot of what we see now in terms of the product and how freaking stubborn Vince McMahon is to change, even when it's obvious that there are some things that should be changed, and just, I don't know, this overall malaise that this product feels like it's been in, this rut that they've been in creatively now for so many years, has everything to do with there being no competition. You know, TNA is not competition to them that's going to motivate them to change their creative. Ring of Honor is not going to motivate them to change their storylines and how they push and who they push. Lucha Underground, these are not real competitors to WWE. I don't know that there will ever be another organization that has the financial backing or a great TV slot and they can sign some big names away. You know, it could happen. I don't think it will. I think those days are done, and they ain't never coming back. And I think that lack of competition has hurt wrestling, and it's hurt WWE more than anything. And I said in the article, except for all the drugs and all the steroids that have killed, you know, so many guys that have killed themselves, really, in their 40s and their 30s and their 50s, all those guys that have died young, that is the worst thing to happen to wrestling. Not invasion, but, you know, just the influx and the availability of all these drugs and all the shit that those guys did. It's awful. It's awful. That was worse. But I would say the second worst thing behind that was the death of WCW. That was the worst thing to happen to the wrestling business. As bad as WCW was there at the end, and as much as they deserved to die, and you got a guy like Ric Flair, the face of WCW, who has admitted that he was happy to see them go down, that tells you right there how bad things must have been. When Ric Flair says it brought a smile to his face to see WCW die when it did, it was bad. But the fact that they're no longer around and there's nobody to push Vince McMahon around and push him against the wall, you know, that's the greatest motivating factor of all. When you're somebody like Vince McMahon in 1997, and you think you're putting out the best product, and people are watching, but there's way more people watching on the other channel, and you're bleeding money, and they're stealing your guys away from you, and they've got the NWO, and Sting, and Goldberg, and all these guys, and you're getting your ass kicked in the ratings week after week after week, it motivates you. It motivates you. you realize, hey, you know, we got to make a change here. We got to start doing something different. And in the end, Vince McMahon prevailed. There's nobody around to do that anymore. Dixie Carter is not going to intimidate Vince McMahon. She ain't going to bully him around. Right? There's no one. So the death of WCW, to me, you know, it's still having an impact today, 15 years later. We're seeing it now. Everybody who bitches and moans and complains about the product and three-hour Raws and this sucks and this and that, it all goes back to that, in my opinion. It all goes back to there being no competition for these guys. There's no competition. Hey, why change? We're still making money. We're still selling out buildings. When they had Shane McMahon come out a few weeks ago and he was doing that work shoot and talking about how ratings are down under your watch and the stock is down, all of that is true. All of that, everything he said there is true. And then what was Stephanie McMahon's response? You remember what she said? You say that to us here in front of this packed house in Detroit. And that's the mentality. All of these things are down. General interest seems to be down. It doesn't seem as fun and as exciting anymore. But they're still selling out buildings. Not every week, but they still sell out. They still do very well for themselves. They're making money hand over fist. They made as much revenue, I think, this past year as they have in their entire history. And you ask yourself, how is that possible? And if they're doing that, what's the incentive for them to change? That's why I think the death of WCW is what's continuing to do more damage than anything to WWE right now. Speaking of Benoit, Taylor from Dayton, Texas. If Chris Benoit were still alive and the incident with his family never happened, what would his status or position be in WWE? And who would you want him to face at WrestleMania? Well, let's say, I mean, Benoit would be almost 50 now. He wouldn't be on the roster full-time. I think he'd be helping out in some capacity down at the Performance Center. You know, Triple H, I think, would have wanted him down there to help teach those guys and be an influence or a mentor on them. As far as him still having a WrestleMania match, I think he would have had a match in the last few years with Daniel Bryan. I think Benoit and Bryan would have been a WrestleMania match within the last, you know, 3 years, probably. I could see both of them wanting to work together, similar styles, right? The diving headbutt versus the diving headbutt, and I think that would have been a hell of a match. Even Benoit, probably at 40, whatever he would have been at the time, 47, 48, probably would have had a hell of a match with Daniel Bryan. Chris, from Roman Reigns' hometown of Pensacola, Florida, what was your opinion of the Macho Man versus DDP feud, and was this one of the best in WCW history? I don't know where it ranks in terms of WCW history. They had a pretty good rivalry. I know it put DDP on the map. He talked about that when I interviewed him and had him on for the Match Anatomy segment, when we talked about his match with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc, and he went off, and it was the coolest thing. He just went off on his own and started talking about Macho Man stories, and I could listen to Macho Man stories all friggin' day. That was one of the most, you know, fun interviews I've done. So he talked glowingly about what Randy Savage did for him and his career and how he put him over, and they had a great feud. But where it ranks in history, I don't know. There's been a lot of great feuds in WCW history. I don't think it would be top five. It may not even be top 10, but it's probably up there. Steve from Appleton, Wisconsin. March 5th marked the 3-year anniversary of the death of William Moody, Paul Bearer. His death was used as the major source of friction between CM Punk and The Undertaker leading into WrestleMania 29. If he didn't pass away so close to Mania that year, do you think it would have had a positive or negative impact on the build-up for Undertaker and Punk's match? And would we have seen CM Punk beat The Undertaker instead of Brock Lesnar being the first one to do so? No, I don't think it would have had any impact whatsoever on the finish. Undertaker was always going to win that match. Would it have made the build-up better or worse? It would have made it better. You know, you see them use personal things like that, weaving them into storylines, and sometimes it just comes off as very tacky, and sometimes it's okay. I wasn't a huge fan of that at the time, you know, Paul's dead and pouring his ashes out and all that bullshit. I was not a fan of that storyline, but it just wasn't that good. So, you know, if they had to come up with a better creative idea to build tension between the two of them, I think that probably would have been a good thing. Because they wouldn't have had to go into the gutter and just rely on, hey, this guy just died, and You know, I mean, you could argue, I guess, well, Undertaker was fighting for, he was fighting for Paul Bearer. It didn't need that. You could have built up a Punk Undertaker match in a different way, and it would have been just fine. So I don't think it would have made much of a difference, but if anything, I think the build-up might have been even better without that. Let's see here. Derek Jones. What do you think are the best WrestleManias of each era in WWE? For instance, what was the best WrestleMania of the Hogan era, the New Generation era, the Attitude era, the Ruthless Aggression era, and today? And Derek has them listed here. Hogan era, WrestleMania 1 through 9. Well, I'm going to give you my favorites. I don't know if they're necessarily the best. Obviously, I'm a little biased here, but of the Hogan era, WrestleMania 1 through 9, I'm a big fan of WrestleMania 8. I like WrestleMania 6, too, but that's more for the main event, not so much the entire show. I'm going to go WrestleMania 8. I just really like that show. So I'm going to pick WrestleMania 8 for the Hogan era. And that was, you know, in a big building there. They had about 60,000 people, I think, in the Hoosier Dome for that one. New Generation era, WrestleMania 10 through 13. It's got to be WrestleMania 10. WrestleMania 10 is one of the best shows they've ever done. So that's my pick there. Attitude era, WrestleMania 14 to 18. Got to go WrestleMania 17. That may be the best WrestleMania ever. Ruthless Aggression, WrestleMania 19 to 24. People are going to get mad when I say this. WrestleMania 19 was a good show. I don't know why it didn't do as well as the other WrestleManias did. If you look up WrestleMania buy rates on Google and take a look at the buy rate for WrestleMania 16, 17, 18, and then you hit 19, and then you hit 20, for 19, there's this huge dip. And I couldn't tell you why that is. That was a loaded card. They had Brock and Kurt Angle in the main event. They had Rock and Austin. They had Hogan against McMahon. They had Jericho and Shawn Michaels. That was Shawn Michaels' first WrestleMania match back since 14. They had some good matches on the undercard, too. I don't know. I don't know why that show didn't do better. It was a loaded lineup. It was a really good show, but I'm going to go at WrestleMania 21. I really enjoyed that show, and I thought from top to bottom, you know, they opened with Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio. Not the best match they've ever had, but still, I mean, come on. It's Eddie and Rey. You had Undertaker and Randy Orton, who had a really good match. You had the Piper's Pit segment, which was a lot of fun with Piper and Austin. You had... plus, also, I just really enjoyed the whole WrestleMania Goes Hollywood theme. I thought all those skits they did were fucking genius. It was just a really fun show. The main event, Triple H and Batista, they built that match up so well. People wanted so badly to see Batista win that championship, and then he did. And that match did huge business. They didn't have any major celebrity involvement on the show or anything like that. They had Triple H and Batista in the main event, and that WrestleMania did over a million buys on pay-per-view. And that's the power of good storytelling. When you give people a match they want to see, and you tell a good story, they will reward you for it. They will reward you for it, and they did that year at WrestleMania. But that card and just the build-up and the whole theme of it, I love that show. That was actually a really fun WrestleMania. And also, holy shit, I mean, how could I forget? Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. One of the biggest reasons why that was such a great show. That was one of the best matches in WrestleMania history. That was a fantastic match. So I got to go at WrestleMania 21. And then today's era he has listed as WrestleMania 25 to the present. Obviously, you guys know WrestleMania 25, my favorite WrestleMania match ever, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. The rest of that show, I think, was pretty much dog shit, so I can't say WrestleMania 25 was a great show. 26 didn't do much for me. 27 was horrendous, aside from the match that Triple H had with The Undertaker. I guess Orton and Punk had a good match, but that was just not a good show. 28 was good. 29 was terrible. 30, I thought, was a really good WrestleMania. I thought 30 was probably the best WrestleMania in like a decade, overall, top to bottom, I thought. 31 was also very good. I thought last year's WrestleMania turned out to be a hell of a show, too. So really, it's between 30 and 31. If I had to give an edge, I'd probably give the edge to 30. I think of the modern era, WrestleMania 30 was probably the best one. So that would get my vote. So there you go. Mike from Long Island. Buy or sell? Phoenix or Pentagon Jr. from Lucha Underground? Ah, the two brothers. They are brothers in real life. Well, you know my my affection for Pentagon Jr., although I have praised Phoenix a lot. I think as a performer, like as a wrestler and all of the moves and the dives and everything, Phoenix is better. Phoenix is definitely better, but it's about more than just that. I love everything about Pentagon Jr. I love the makeup. I love just the whole getup, the whole character, the whole arm-breaking thing. I just love it. The music. And on top of that, he's not a bad wrestler. He's actually pretty good. So, in terms of the complete package, I got to buy on Pentagon Jr. and sell on Phoenix. I'm actually hoping to meet Pentagon. I wasn't planning on going to WrestleCon, but I saw that they're going to have a bunch of Lucha Underground guys there doing signings and photos and stuff at WrestleCon. And one of my goals, I don't know how the schedule is going to fit because, you know, we're hoping to do, you know, a podcast, but if I can make it work, I would love to be able to meet Pentagon at WrestleCon. We'll see how that works. James from Toledo, Ohio has a buy or sell. Buy or sell on which celebrity had the bigger impact on their specific WrestleMania? Mr. T at WrestleMania 1 or Mike Tyson at WrestleMania 14? Mr. T. Buy on Mr. T at WrestleMania 1. Sell on Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson's involvement was huge. But without Mr. T, there may not be a WrestleMania 14. And I don't think that's too much of an exaggeration. They were banking everything on Mr. T's involvement in that show. And it almost didn't happen because Mr. T was getting cold feet backstage before the match. They couldn't find him. Hogan and Piper, you know, the top heel and the top babyface had to go find him and talk to him and calm him down and tell him everything was going to be okay and nobody was going to shoot on him or whatever it was they talked to him about. It almost didn't happen, but I think unless you lived through that era, and I was very young at the time, like at the time I didn't know, but looking back on it and reading up on it and watching the documentaries about it and everything and how business was for them and the loans that the McMahons had to take out, and they banked everything on that show, and it was all centered around Mr. T's involvement and the build-up to it and all the media exposure they got for it. That wouldn't have happened most likely without him. So as big as Tyson's involvement was, it may not happen without Mr. T. So I got to buy on him. And one more buy or sell here. Roger from Fairmont, West Virginia, who is celebrating a birthday this week, by the way. Actually, he and his brother both are, so happy birthday to the both of you. We all know your all-time favorite Royal Rumble match is the 1992 one. And we also know that your all-time favorite WrestleMania match is Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. If you had to buy or sell one or the other, which one would you pick? If you buy one, the other does not happen. Why must you guys do this to me? Well, it's funny. You know, Brian Bird, who's notorious. Everybody, I think, on Facebook knows Brian Bird. Brian Bird emailed me the same question last week. I'm buying the 1992 Royal Rumble. Because, for me, it has better replay value. I can go back and watch that Royal Rumble at any time. I try not to watch it too often, because then you get sick of it. But I watch that at least once a year, sometimes more. I can go back and watch it, though, you know, once a month, probably, and not get tired of that match. It has, part of it is nostalgia, part of it is that era. Like, I grew up in that era, I love that era of wrestling. And the match itself is really good. The WrestleMania 25 match, I don't know that it has as much replay value to me as the Rumble does, and so for that reason alone, I'll buy on the 92 Rumble. And also because if their match at WrestleMania 25 never happens, between Shawn and Undertaker, we still have their Hell in a Cell match from Bad Blood in 97. So, it's all good. This week's sad tweet, or tweets, belong to Tammy Sitch. Sonny was very angry with Edge and Christian for something that was said on one of their shows. At the end of the third episode of the Edge and Christian show, that totally reeks of something or other, they had a graphic for a box of, quote, Sonny's Drops, like eye drops, I guess, with Howard Finkel doing the voiceover claiming that it was the sponsor for the episode and that side effects may include erratic behavior, cake fancer, which apparently was their way of saying fake cancer, because Sonny has been accused of faking having cancer before. And also, multiple DUIs was one of the side effects listed. And in fact, she is about to be sentenced, I think, on some DUIs in court in the next few weeks. So anyway, once she found out about this, she took to Twitter and she was none too happy. She said, "Those who matter in WWE offices called to check on me in the hospital a couple of weeks ago. Edge and Christian are just douchebags. Ugly," she called them. She says, "It's fine. Those two fucking ugly Canadians can say whatever they want. I will see them at a convention somewhere. You know I am a ruthless bitch. When they were both first getting hired, they both had crushes on me. Carl DeMarco can verify. I guess because I didn't fuck them, they're bitter." So, that was about the response I think I would have expected from Sonny. What a train wreck. We are counting down the 15 best matches in WCW history, one match per week, for 15 straight weeks leading up to the anniversary of the final Nitro. Just coming up at the end of the month. We're almost in the home stretch. Last week was match number 11, which was War Games from WrestleWar 1992, probably the best War Games match that they've ever done. Match number 12 of 15 from Uncensored, March 15th, 1998, from the Mobile Civic Center in Mobile, Alabama. Diamond Dallas Page, Raven, and Chris Benoit in what they called a Triple Jeopardy match. Falls Count Anywhere for the United States Championship. This was a really fun match. A couple of really creative spots in there for that time, especially. Apparently, the finish was being debated right up until bell time. Benoit was originally supposed to win the U.S. title, but that ended up not happening. DDP and Raven were feuding at the time, and they interjected Benoit into the feud, probably just to make the matches better. We got a three-way collar and elbow tie-up to start, which is where that clip you heard at the beginning of the podcast came from, with Tony Schiavone talking about how he's never seen three men hook it up together at one time, which I thought was funny because apparently I'm 12. They brawled down the aisleway. They put a trash can over Raven's head at one point, and Benoit and DDP both took turns bashing it with a crutch. Where they found this crutch, I have no idea. It was a giant Uncensored sign next to the entranceway that DDP got thrown through. Cut up his back pretty good on it. Didn't look like glass when he went through it. I guess it must have been. It looked like it was made of cardboard or plastic or something, but he was all cut up after. Benoit hit Raven with the kitchen sink. Literally, the kitchen sink. I think the first time I ever saw an actual kitchen sink used in a match was at a WrestleMania. It would have been 13. They had that Chicago street fight. It was Ahmed Johnson and LOD against the Nation. I think it was Hawk, who brought an actual kitchen sink to the ring. That probably would have been the first time I ever saw that. Back in the ring, Benoit had Raven in a sleeper hold. This was one of the cooler spots of the match. So DDP, who had been thrown through that sign, was all cut up. He crawled all the way back to the ring, from one end of the aisle to the other. He crawled all the way back. Got in the ring. He put Benoit in a sleeper, while Benoit still had Raven in a sleeper. So now we have a double sleeper hold. And Raven wisely dropped down for the jawbreaker, which is one of the wisest ways to break up a sleeper hold. But it turned out to be a double jawbreaker, because when he dropped and Benoit had his jaw jacked on top of Raven's head, so too did DDP get his jaw jacked on top of Benoit's head. So I thought that was kind of cool. And this was the coolest spot of the whole match. Benoit's giving Raven his rolling Germans. Gave him two of them, I think. All of a sudden, DDP comes up from behind Benoit, and he delivers a double German suplex. DDP suplexed Benoit, who suplexed Raven. See, DDP did it long before Brock Lesnar ever did. So the place went nuts. The announcers went nuts. That was the biggest spot of the night. Probably the biggest spot of the entire show. And I didn't even watch the whole show, and I bet you it was probably the biggest spot they did that night. And he did it with busted up ribs, no less. In storyline, he had tape all over his ribs and everything. So, Lodi. Remember Lodi? Lodi was one of the members of Raven's flock. What was it? It was Lodi, Sick Boy, Kidman, Reese, Saturn. Was Saturn part of the flock? I don't remember. I think he might have been. I'll take Raven's Flock over the Wyatt family any day of the week. The way they've been booked, are you kidding me? Yeah, I'll take the Flock. So Lodi handed Raven a sign that literally said, use my sign, and he hit DDP with it. Then he pulled the paper off, and it turned out to be a stop sign underneath. Raven set DDP up on a table in the ring. Benoit then hit Raven in the head with the stop sign after he put it down. Benoit set Raven up on the top rope. So you got to visualize this now. DDP is laid out on a table. Benoit's got Raven on top. It looks like he's going to suplex him onto DDP through the table. DDP sees this. He gets up off the table. He just shoves Benoit off the top rope to the floor. So Benoit's gone. DDP climbs up. He then delivers a diamond cutter to Raven off the top rope through the table. Well, it was supposed to be through the table. It was on top of the table. The table didn't break. The table leg broke, but the actual table did not break. It still looked cool. It was a botch, but it was fine. It actually looked it looked more brutal that way, because poor Raven, instead of going through, he just kind of smacked the table and the table kind of fell over. And DDP covered him, got the pin, and retained the title. So, a hell of a fun match. The very next month at Spring Stampede, Raven beat DDP to win the U.S. title, but his reign only lasted one day. He was only meant to be a transitional champion. He lost the title to Goldberg on Nitro the very next night, which, coincidentally, is another match on our countdown. Raven, I was never the biggest Raven fan. I feel like somebody's asked me this question before, and I've answered it. I was never a huge Raven fan, but Raven deserved a longer run with that belt. He had a good thing going in WCW around this time. This was when he was at his peak. The peak of what they did with him, anyway. He had a good thing going. They could have gotten a few months out of him, I think, with that championship, but it was just wrong place, wrong time. I mean, Goldberg was on the ascent. Goldberg was more over than almost everybody else on that roster, certainly more than Raven. It was the right move to make to put the belt on Goldberg. But still, I think Raven deserved better than what he got. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. And don't forget to vote in our Raw poll every Monday night as soon as the show goes off the air. Hopefully they'll do better than 87-13. Or maybe it'll be 87-13 in the opposite direction this week. Because the show this past week was, not good. And also, leave us some love on iTunes and Stitcher. We are a 5-star rated podcast on iTunes. You can rate us. You can leave us a review, which is very helpful to any potential new listeners out there who are looking for wrestling podcasts. So I appreciate that. And also, if you missed it, please check out the interview I did with Jim Ross this past week. It is up on our YouTube channel. You go to youtube.com/, I think it's The Solomonster is the official channel. You can hit the subscribe button. Almost 20 minutes. The full interview is up there. It's also pushed out to the feed as episode 428 in case you missed it. Like I said earlier, it was a big thrill for me to be able to talk to JR. And it's pretty cool that, so far this year, we're barely 2 full months into the year. I've already had the chance to interview 2 different WWE Hall of Famers and 2 future Hall of Famers. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And we'll see. You never know what or who may be next in the future. But definitely check that out. And also, if you like it, if you like the interview, and you want to send a tweet to me and tag JR in it, at JRSBBQ, and let him know what you thought of the interview. If you liked it, let him know. So definitely hit him up on Twitter. We will be back next weekend for a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 430. We will talk about the Roadblock show, which is coming up next Saturday on the network. I'll have full thoughts and a review on that on next week's podcast, among other fun things, I'm sure. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you right back here next time. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan's WCW contract splattered all over the internet. He got a $2 million signing bonus, 25% of the ticket revenue from all Nitro and Thunder events that he appeared on. He also got $20,000 per month for as long as he was part of the NWO, 50% of the profits from any Hulk Hogan merchandise that was sold, and a minimum $675,000 for any pay-per-view he appeared on. You know what I say? I say good for him. If I could get that kind of deal for myself, if somebody wanted me that badly, they were that stupid, then great. Always ask for what you feel you're worth. Your boss should have the guts to say no. WCW wanted to blow this guy so badly, they put a towel down on the floor so they wouldn't get rug burned. Son.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.